Just think of it as, think of this as a TED Talk. All right. So I just want to mention that, as I sort of blurted out for Linda or for Karen, that I all of a sudden got this inspiration. I've had something happen to me this week that has really impacted me, and I'm wanting to share my experience with you. And so the talk title is Above the Line, Below the Line, and it's subtitled Waking Meditation Part 2, Making the Unconscious Conscious. So this is a tool that I'm going to be sharing that is going to help you in the present moment and in any given time for you to be able to discover how that you're unconscious. In other words, that you're living as if someone or something is making you the way that you are. And so this is a tool that will help that become very plain and clear to you. And imagine that, to be able to have something that is always going to help you decide whether or not and give you a choice as to whether or not you're going to be conscious in your relationship to what you're having in your life. And so this that has happened has that to me that I'm, the reason why I'm sharing this now is because Jane and I have been studying a book called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And the authors basically primarily work in the secular world, working with corporate executives and huge Fortune 500 organizations. And they're sort of buried in the corporate kind of scene with respect to supporting organizations and their effectiveness and their success. But their book, the substance of their book, is inspired by Dr. Michael Beckwith, who is, of course, the person who formulated the four stages of spiritual awakening. You know, life happens to me, by me, through me, as me. As well as Gay and Catherine Hendricks, is that right? Who are prominent leaders in the whole arena of emotional maturity and how we can really create great integrity in our lives as we take ownership and self-responsibility. Well, anyway, their work is so aligned with us in New Thought, and especially with respect to the Q process, as you'll see, that it's just a perfect fit for us. And so I'm wanting to begin our conversation with the very same way that the conscious leadership group from which this comes, as they present this kind of awakening moment to a room of corporate executives from all over the world, they ask a very simple question. Where are you? Above the line or below the line in your way of being in your life? And so right away, I'm wanting to point out that when we're asked that question, I'm going to ask you in just a moment, where are you, above the line or below the line? Okay, and so you don't know what the line means yet, right? But there's automatically a part of ourself that gets into a moment. Our brain is in this moment of we're wanting to get it right. Right? You need more information before you can answer that. So there's a part of our mechanism of making meaning that already has as its intent, I need to be right here. And so I'm wanting to point out that there's a dimension of ourself that's hardwired to be right in any given moment when presented something that we're sort of wondering how it's going to fall or how it's going to land. Excuse me? This happens routinely now and during the first service.
She locked it down.
Okay, whatever it was. Okay. All right, so in a moment, I'm going to ask you, are you above the line or below the line? And so, what was that?
I'm on the line.
You're on the line. Okay, no, you're either above it or below it. There's no either or. Okay, so I'm gonna start to give you some clues here in just a second. But I just want to check. How many of you feel that you're above the line? Raise your hand. Right now?
Right now.
And how many of you are below the line? Right now. Okay. All right, so we'll see. So let's just begin to kind of create some context for this. So what if we had above the line What if that was being open? What would you imagine below the line would be if it's either or?
Closed,
okay. Okay, closed. Okay, good. And so what if needing to be right, that dynamic of needing to be right that we kind of feel is on the edge of anything that pulls us into some kind of relationship where we're kind of on the line, is that kind of, what kind of behavior is that? Is that above the line or below the line? Okay, so needing to be right, we could say, is a below the line behavior, right? Okay, and so what would be an above the line behavior? If needing to be right was below the line, what would above the line behavior be? Maybe it would be something like, your needing to be right doesn't make me wrong. Can you feel the difference between that? Below the line, I need to be right. I'm invested in having, you know, someone agree with me or validate me, and that's at the expense of someone else being wrong. That's the dynamic of below the line. But above the line dynamic is about your need to be right doesn't make me wrong. Because when I feel wrong or when I need to be right, I'm below the line. How does that sound? Now let's watch a video. That's a cue to the sound. We're gonna watch a, excuse me, just a second. Before we do that, I'm just wanting to kind of add a little bit more context to this, and that is, when we're below the line, we can easily find fault with what's happening in our life. When we're below the line, we can easily discover that there's not enough, because we're living in that sense, that I'm not enough. Because when we're living above the line, what is our sense of ourself? We're more than enough, right? Okay. And so when we're below the line, we're in this struggle. We kind of have to make things happen that we want to have happen, and then the things that we don't want to happen seem to happen all the time. We can attribute that dynamic to being below the line. And so if we kind of have a sense that when we're below the line, we're going to be stuck in the habits of judgment, scarcity, and struggle, whenever we feel judged or when we're judging, whenever we're in a sense of not enough, whenever we're trying to really have a hard time of making something that we want to happen, then we have to agree, oh, I'm below the line. And as we become awakened to that, we can also have a sense that I'm in victimhood. Because I'm acting as if, I'm thinking as if, I'm feeling as if everything in my life is something that I have to contend with, as opposed to living above the line, where I am intentional about owning what I'm having as my experience. And I am using what I have because it is always for me. So now we're going to kind of have a sense of what we're talking about in the context of really understanding fully what it means to become conscious as an individual. To become conscious simply means that we are aware of where we are. Location, location. So it's not that when we're below the line that we can't wake up. We have to be conscious when we're below the line so that we do what? Get above the line, right? Right? There's something for us to do because to knowingly, to be consciously knowing that we're below the line is where our suffering comes from, where our discomfort comes from, where our stress comes from. When we're unconscious below the line, we're still experiencing those driven behaviors. It's just that we believe that the problem is out there instead of recognizing, no, there's something that I need to do in order to be in greater integrity with the truth of who I am and what I'm here to accomplish in the context of who I am. All right, here's the movie.
One question that conscious leaders ask themselves over and over is, where am I? To support leaders in locating themselves as they ask the question, where am I?
Yep, sorry. Let's try this one. Try this again.
One question that conscious leaders ask themselves over and over is, where am I? To support leaders in locating themselves as they ask the question, "Where am I?" we offer this tool, a line, a simple black line. At any moment, all leaders and all people are either above the line or below the line. Our location describes how we're being with what is occurring in our life right now. If we're above the line, we are open, curious, and committed to learning. If we are below the line, we are closed, defensive, and committed to being right. Stop right now and simply ask yourself, where am I? In this now moment, am I above the line or below the line? Typically, when people are below the line, they believe certain things about the world. For example, they believe there is not enough. It could be that there's not enough money, or time, or space, or energy, or love. People below the line also believe that their story about the situation is right. People below the line also believe that there is a threat out there. Something or someone is threatening their desire for approval, control, or security. And people below the line see the situation as serious. The deeper below the line they are, the more serious things look. People below the line tend to behave certain ways as well. They tend to cling to an opinion, find fault and blame, gossip, explain, rationalize and justify, get overwhelmed, and avoid conflict or pursue conflict for the sake of winning. When people are above the line, they believe that learning and growing are more important than being right. They believe that all people and circumstances are their allies, here for their growth. They believe that from a distance, almost everything is funny. People above the line live in curiosity, listen deeply, speak unarguably, question all their beliefs, and live a life of play. Now, knowing what you know about being above or below the line, where are you? One thing to know as you consider this question. We are hardwired to go below the line. Literally, our brain is programmed to perceive threat, and when it does, a chemical cocktail courses through our veins, and we go below the line. This reaction was designed to help us survive in the presence of a real threat to our physical survival. An issue for modern-day leaders is that often our brains can't tell the difference between a threat to our physical survival and a threat to our ego or identity. We react and get defensive when we experience a threat to our ego. So in many ways, being below the line is natural and normal. But when we are below the line, we're not in a state, literally brain state, of high creativity, collaboration, innovation, and relational connection. We're simply trying to survive. Leaders today can't thrive if they're in survival mode. So the first activity of conscious leadership is location, location, location. In this now moment, where am I? Telling ourselves and others the truth about our current location begins the great conversation.
Okay, here we are. So what do you think about that? It helps me understand what's going on in this world right away. Can we not kind of see that the world is below the line? Yeah. And you know people in your life that are below the line? Oops, I forgot. That's being below the line when you point that out. I'm sorry. So the effort is to wake up when we notice that we're below the line, to recognize that that has consequences. And so it's important for us to kind of be clear that we can't afford to be below the line in any way, shape, or form, because it inhibits us from being able to show up in our life and being able to make a difference in our world. And so if we see that the world is caught up in below-the-line thinking, below-the-line in terms of how they're resolving their own discomforts, we can make sense of the craziness that's happened and all the things that are going on in politics and the things that are happening in the relationships that we witness that are falling apart. But what I'm wanting us to begin to do is to take this understanding into our own sense of personal integrity with respect to how we're showing up in our relationships in our world. And as I look at my own unconscious below-the-line behavior, I can see how all of my regrets are tied to that. I mean, just think about a regret that you might have in your life right now. I'm thinking about a regret that I have with my daughter. My daughter and I have been estranged for 16 years. And we haven't had any relationship with our granddaughter. And there's a story behind that. But what I'm wanting to share is that as I kind of became aware of this and began to see how my own below-the-line parenting has had consequences, and I was able to see in my experience of really wanting to kind of understand and kind of reconcile that dynamic. I have for a number of years in the context of my own internal practice done what I felt needed to be done in order to, in my heart, reconcile. I remember a moment when my daughter was very young, 8 or 9 years old, and I was in San Francisco. We were on the Golden Gate Bridge with me and my son and one of my past wife experiences at the time. And she was frightened and afraid, and she would not walk across the Golden Gate Bridge because it was doing this. And I forced her to go. And I saw in that moment, as I reflected back on that and doing the cue process, I reflected back on seeing how it was that I taught her not to trust me. I taught her to know that her dad will never, ever protect her. I taught her that. And I see that that's an effect of below-the-line parenting. So I'm not wanting us to use this as a way of beating ourselves up. I'm wanting to use this as a way of showing how we can use this tool to heal and transform. So in the course of my working with this, aware that I had hurt my daughter, and that our falling out didn't happen in that moment, it happened shortly after my previous wife, Nan, had passed away. And I came back to my family, you know, needing to receive the comfort and support, and I sought my daughter out for this. And we had a relationship at the time, but in that moment of my needing her, she awakened in full bloom to what she had carried all of her younger years around her dad, never ever being there for her. And that's when the door slammed shut. And so I re-entered into that moment a few days ago with this kind of awareness, with this kind of understanding. And I had in my heart many years earlier reconciled with her and at a place where I was willing to do whatever it took to kind of be in process with her, talking to my son, asking for him to be sure and let me know if there's ever an opportunity for me to kind of approach some kind of reconciliation. I had, at the same time, I also experienced a very vivid dream of us, my daughter and I, reconciling with each other. And so I had at some deeper level a deep knowing that on the soul level, there was nothing that I needed to do. But yet at the same time, I didn't feel called on the outer to do anything either. I felt perfectly kind of in this place of completeness. But then in that moment, I saw exactly what I had done that I wasn't so clear about before, having taught my daughter that she could not trust me. And having been able to kind of see that was something that occurred because I was below the line, what could I do now in this, in my consciousness, recognizing that wherever she is and whatever she's doing, you know, she may be in a different place, but what can I do to kind of shift the world? And so those of you who know the cue process know that in phase 3, you go back to an earlier childhood moment, and you give the offenders in your life all of the things that they need to come from their higher self. You imagine hearing their voices in the way in which you want to receive that message in order to overcome the belief that you might have taken on because of that early childhood hurt. And so I was in this place where I was imagining my daughter, Julie, was doing the cue process on her father. And when she got to that place where she was able to recognize that she was carrying with her a belief that I inserted in her awareness that I'm not the one, I'm not lovable, because here's the evidence, my dad doesn't love me, he abandoned me, he left me for somebody else. If she was in that moment of trying to work that out, and I imagined that she was doing the worksheet on me, and then when it came to that section in the worksheet where it was time for her to give her offenders the voice, I spoke in that moment to my daughter. And I gave her the words that completely unleashed the moment so that she could take in her life a different message. And it was such a kind of monumental rush of energy through me that I immediately went into a different dimension. I know I'm talking a little bit weird now, but stay with me. This is almost done. And I went into an awareness that I was with Julie and we were together and we were in not a dream. I incorrectly interpreted that moment that I had many years ago. But in this moment that I had Thursday, I revisit that very dream, but it opened up and it became a pre-life contract meeting where Julie and I agreed together that we would enter into this dynamic. And the reason why I'm trying to express this is because that I couldn't see the part of me that would be able to kind of I couldn't see what I could possibly do to enable Julie to kind of welcome me back into her connection. I had to go to a place where I understood that we had arranged to do this together because I needed to learn and she needed to learn only what we could give each other when we were in the effort to try to forgive something within myself, ourselves, that otherwise would keep us forever in bondage to the belief that we were not enough, or that we weren't lovable, that we weren't okay. And so in this moment, when I realized that my experience with Julie and my, I don't even know that I'm able to describe this part of it now, but help me out. So I'm at this place now where I'm really glad I have another chance at this talk. But those of you who are going to be here at the second service, you kind of help me out with holding the space that I can kind of complete this part. So what I'm wanting to really land upon is, bless you, I'm wanting to land upon the sense that when we really can see and look at our regret as being the unintended consequence of our living below the line, and to actually see that, and then be willing to see how we help create the very hurt and wounds that we're wanting to free ourselves from, we first have to get to a place where we see what we did, and then be with ourselves with great compassion. Because in that moment, I was 36, 7, 8 years old. I should never have been a parent that young. Anyway, so the point is I could have compassion for me in that moment in my frustration of trying to get my daughter to trying to connect up. Here I was trying to do that out of guilt, out of trying to trying to repair or patch up a relationship that I messed up. And to be able to see my struggle and to be able to have forgiveness and compassion was enabled me to free myself into knowing that if I am able to lift myself and her up into this awareness, that there's healing that can happen when we acknowledge that if we could do it over again, or if we had another chance, we would go back and we would re-say those words, we would re-authorize ourselves to be in our relationship in a different way. All of us would do that, but until we actually experience the dimension of insight that's necessary to allow us to be fully illumined with respect to the depth of what is the consequence of being below the line, we don't commit to what must happen next. And so Jane and I are interested in really working with the 15 commitments, because the commitments are what brings us into an intentional practice of waking up and getting above the line. And so as we look to see what that is, that means that we're shifting out of being closed, defensive, committed to being right, to shifting into being open, curious, and committed to learning, which sounds like it's a good thing to do, an easy thing to do, but it's not so easy. It requires a depth of work. And when we understand that that involves a choice, that we have to actually be focused on watching our thoughts and being mindful of when we shift into some kind of negativity or some kind of needing to be right, to move very quickly to an antidote. And so as we recognize this whole dynamic is kind of an either-or situation, and that on one side, below the line, our ego is involved with survival. On the other side, we're really trying to unleash ourselves and align with Spirit's intent to bring us into the expression of who and what we've come here to be. When we recognize that that's the effort, then we need to create a spiritual practice around that. So I'm finishing up. Okay. So the last thing I'm going to say is that if 95% of our behavior is unconscious, as we've talked about in previous talks, then we can consider that 95% of the time we're living, thinking, believing, being below the line. And so we may be walking around thinking whatever, but there is a conversation in our head, a story that's going on in our head, and if we're not listening to it and seeing what that's telling us, we're listening to something that's keeping us below the line. And so what can we do? Well, here's a couple of things to consider. Be in the question, what behaviors, attitudes, and ways of being am I aware of that are below the line? And as you reflect upon your life, what relationships have been impacted by being below the line? Almost like doing a personal inventory. And what might change in your life if you're able to be routinely above the line? Just consider that. How might your life be different? And then finally, what helps you to realize that you are relating to your experience from below the line? We need to develop a way in which we recognize very quickly that we're below the line. And I want you to wonder about what would be a signal to you. What does your body do? What do you hear in your head? What do you feel that gives you a sense, oh, now I'm below the line? And then what are you willing to do to shift? To shift either into creating a habit of gratitude, a habit of self-compassion, or a habit of presence. All right, we'll see what happens next talk. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you just letting me process a bit. Thank you so much.